Good afternoon, folks. This is Sheriff Ozzie Knezovich with the Sheriff's Report. As you know, it's a political season, and we are doing some interviews with candidates. Right now in studio with me, I have Nancy McLaughlin, our current county commissioner. Nancy was appointed this spring to fill Commissioner Todd Mielke's position when he left. And one of the things that I always make clear is, if I have one side of the candidate side on, I'll invite the others, and we'll be reaching out to your other two opponents here and see if they're willing to come on the show and talk about the issues. So with that in mind, since we only have 27 minutes on this show, and there's a lot of materials that the candidates want to try to get out, and you have limited time. Yep. So Nancy, why don't you give us a little bit of the background? You know, who's Nancy and why are you doing this?
Well, thank you, Ozzie, for having me on the show today. And great question. Why am I doing this? The political scene is not an easy scene. It takes a lot of determination, and you have to be willing to govern and not just always, you know, say no to everything that may be coming down the stream. My husband and I have a small business which we raised our family on. We have three children. I grew up in small business, watching my parents build a large cabinet company. Well, from nothing too, the largest cabinet company down in the Boise Valley in Treasure Valley. And so I'd come home after high school, pay bills, write out men's paychecks. I watched the ebb and flow of their business and then our own business and the risks and the rewards. And I didn't always think I wanted to stay in that, because sometimes it's nice just to have that continual paycheck and let somebody else do the work. But that is not the way my husband and I ended up. So we've raised our family on it. We've had a small business. And so then back in 2005-06, I had people saying, Nancy, did you know there was an opening on the city council? You'd be great. You've been involved in this in the neighborhood and that at your local school, and you're a leader. And I just knew, I felt that call. So
you mentioned something right there, yeah. Nancy. You spent your time getting life experience. You spent your time working a small business, which is tough in of itself.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you can go to work for somebody and come in, collect your paycheck, do the job. But I have huge respect for small business owners, because, believe it or not, at one time I was one. And it's a very difficult proposition. Because yep. You have to be disciplined, you have to be organized, and you have to be willing to take a risk.
Yeah.
And that's
and be fiscally responsible.
Fiscally responsible, extremely. And at the same time, you really develop some fairly extreme leadership abilities. And you mentioned that, you know, you were what, 46 when you got the city council?
Yes, yes.
So it's not like you are a career politician.
No.
In no way, shape, or form.
No, some might suggest I am, but I'm not. I'm thinking
well,
when
I'm
I...
I'm going to take him on that one, because one of your opponents, Josh Kearns, calls you a career politician.
Yeah.
And I find that just amazing, because you're a career businesswoman. You're a career mother.
Yep, advocate for my kids and schools.
Exactly.
And my neighborhood.
You've done all these things. You've actually been out. You've lived life. On the other hand, Josh has only been an assistant to a politician forever. That's what he's done.
Yeah.
I mean, he was John Ahern's assistant in the House. He's Jeff Holley's assistant now. He makes $50,000 a year, and he wants to criticize you because, and we'll get to that issue here shortly about a raise that you got when you were on city council. But he makes $50,000 a year to be in a political lackey, and he wants to call you a career politician when, in fact, that's all he has done all his life, is to be a career politician. I hate to break it to you, Josh. If you're somebody's lackey, you are in the political machine. You are the establishment. And now, without any experience in life, you want to come out and lead. What have you done, is my question. But that's just me. That's not Nancy talking. That is me talking, because I am so frustrated with these type of individuals who only think that they attach themselves to a politician, they stick with them for a while, and they think it's their turn when that politician leaves. You, on the other hand, Nancy, you lived life. You built something.
Yeah, I think when that mailer came out, it felt so disingenuous to me of telling only a partial story of, yes, I did help set up a salary review commission, and it had nothing to do about the fact that we'd already had, my husband and I have a small business, and by this time we had worked very hard, and it was consistently going. I didn't need the money, but if we want to have good leaders in the second largest city in the state, which is Spokane at 210,000 in population, you can't expect people to pay bills on $18,000 a year, or even at $30,000 is what we went to when I was there, $18,000 to $30,000. And compare, you know, when you're, you know, should not our elected leaders, in my opinion, make more than support staff who makes no decisions, that are not held accountable to the electorate, don't have to struggle with governing issues. They're just support staff. And so I just felt that attack was quite disingenuous.
Well, you can tell how I felt about it. I thought it was very disingenuous. I thought it was, you know, just horrible. I've never seen anything. I shouldn't say that. I've watched Josh's political strategy in how he manages campaigns, and I watched how he's handled certain campaigns and what he's done to the opponents. And that's not my style of politics.
Yeah.
It's cutthroat politics. Quite frankly, it's throw a lie out there and make your opponent fight the lie. And that's what happens. Mm-hmm. That is their political strategy, folks. Yeah. That's how these people conduct business.
Well, and to me, it's even more disheartening when it's within your own party, when you're supposed to be, you know, when really our values are very, very similar, and yet you're willing to have this internal struggle rather than looking out at the true, you know, the things that are really out there fighting against your core values and beliefs are usually should not be coming from within. It should be those on the outside are trying to struggle to take over, adding more government and more costs and in real ways. And just let's talk about those issues instead of this internal fight. It does us no good.
It really doesn't. And what's even more troubling is, you know, we want to claim that we have all these values, but I'm not seeing those values anymore. I don't really recognize. I don't recognize the Republican Party that I joined several years ago anymore. I say that to all parties. They have let us down, and that's all. I'll leave it there, because we need to get back to you.
Yeah.
What are some of the major issues? Because you've been in the chair for what, 6 months now, almost five?
Since end of February.
Okay. So
yeah,
right in there. Probably still drinking from a fire hose a little, because folks, that's exactly what it's like when you get elected. You may think you know what it's all about, and you may think you know what the job entails, but until you get it, you have no clue. And now that you've had a chance to drink at the fire hose for a little while, what are some of those issues that you find that need immediate attention?
You know, well, I tell you, if I had not had that 8 years of a base training, basically on the city council, this would be a very difficult time, especially trying to do the job as a commissioner
and
run a campaign. Right. So that 8 years has really been a lifesaver, because I understand the basic principles of local government. And it doesn't matter whether you're over at the city or now at the county, we're continually struggling between balancing out those revenues and expenses. And we're fighting against a structure actual gap all the time, where expenses are 2 to 3% higher than your revenues, and it's even more of a struggle in the county. And I knew this when I was on the city, but I didn't have to deal with it. Now I'm having to deal with it, where the county really is limited to their share of sales tax and then property taxes, whereas the city has, you might call it a luxury, of a utility tax, which gives them more of ability to plan and have a little more flexibility within their budget, even though when downturns like what happened when I was on the city council back in 2008, 9, 10 in that area, then it didn't matter how much income, revenue stream, the expense, the revenue just, you know, bottomed out. So now I'm seeing over here at the county similar issues. Things that concern me is that we have no... We have no dollars set in reserves for replacements of anything, any buildings, any for road crews. I mean,
capital items are not even considered.
Yeah, the deferred maintenance costs on our facilities is just very concerning to me. Deferred maintenance on our roads, the struggles with, to me, as in your unit, of how do we get replaced. What do you have, 17 unfilled positions right now? Is that true? In our
right now we have 12 unfilled positions, and you have to remember, when I say unfilled positions, that's on top of 32 positions that we lost due to the 2008 economic downturn. So when you take a look at from when I started as sheriff in 2006, and then you add the 34 that we lost to the economy, and I'm down another 12, that becomes very problematic when you're looking at 46 deputies. Yeah. It's almost 25% of the workforce.
So the 12 positions that are fully funded right now, would what's the issue about? I mean, I know it takes about 18 months to get deputies trained and into back on, you know, get them on the streets and in their vehicles. But what's the issue? Are we just not getting people who want to become police officers? Or those are paid positions that I know that we need like yesterday.
Very good paying positions too. You just tapped into a national dilemma. It's not just Spokane County. The city of Oakland has a workforce of 800. They're down to 400, 50%. L.A. County, 1,300 empty positions about 6 months ago. The Washington State Patrol, all those billboards you see, it's because they can't get people. And why? Who wants to do the job right now? Would you want to be a police officer right now? If you were coming in as a young person, or even as an older person, would you want to be a police officer when people are actually hunting you and assassinating you? I've had those discussions with people, Nancy, that have, you know, we hired them, they were in the training car, and one young lady, she resigned. I called her in and asked why, and she said, you know, Sheriff, that police officer that died a week ago on the East Coast was 25 years old. She was just like me. So that's the dilemmas that we're facing, is the fact that we as a society have allowed our police officers, an entire profession, to be pummeled by the media and by special interest groups to the point that no one really wants to do this job anymore.
No, and you know, when I was, we were having some neighborhood issues back in the mid-1990s, and I have three children, and I had two young teenage boys, and we were inundated with, well, suddenly there were kids in my neighborhood that didn't really belong in the neighborhood. They weren't residing and living, but there we had about three homes within a 4 or 5 block radius that they were kind of bouncing back and forth, and moms were getting, they were afraid. Moms were not letting their kids outside. They were just strange. There was all this gang sign symbols. And I can't say it was African-American kids. They were basically white kids. And so just to do away with that stigma that your gangbangers are of one culture. And so we organized and spent the summer really cleaning things up. And we set up, I co-sponsored the Neighborhood Observation Patrol for that area. But what I wanted to say is that my husband and I and a couple others from the neighborhood got to go through the police academy at the time, which the Citizens Police Academy, and which there's no funds, you know, so there is no, I don't believe at the moment, any citizens.
Well,
is it back?
Do.
Do we do have one?
The Spokane County Sheriff's Office puts on a Citizens Academy, one in the fall, one in the spring. The one in the fall is all about the Spokane County Sheriff's Office from A to Z. The one in the spring is about officer-involved shootings, and we take people through the entire dynamics of what it looks like and what the investigations look like and all the ramifications of an officer-involved shooting.
So is that different than the city police's Citizens Academy?
Ours is, yeah. We put it on. I don't know what the city's putting on. I know that they got away from it. I think they're trying to revamp it. They may be doing it again. But we have a very, very strong citizen outreach component.
Yeah. Well, what I say about that is that so we got to go through the cities at the time, and then I think with budget restraints, at least they didn't have it for a long time. But part of that academy was doing a ride-along with a police officer. And so I went out at night, and I thought it was very intriguing. But that time back then, even though there were issues, I felt safe. And I grew up with – okay, I'm not a big scaredy cat anyways. I grew up with four brothers, second oldest. You know, I'm just not a fearful person. But it really was just an interesting evening that I went out almost all night watching our officers at work. Now, fast forward again when I was on the city council, I went out again. And there was a different feel. I mean, it had gotten more dangerous, it more intense, and the you know, your officers have to go up to windows where, you know, I don't know why. Is it legal in Washington State to have those dark no, windows?
I mean, those tinted. The law.
You know, you can't go up and you can't see who's there. You have no clue if they've got a gun sitting at you there. I mean, it was just a different feel to me, and I kept thinking things have changed in 20 years. It has gotten more intense, and we could hold talk about that as to me is what's going on. I mean, for me personally, I think we have a real breakdown in the family. Issue. We've got parents not parenting. We've got kids not being, you know, home with curfews, and we have a lack of respect among people. We're not valuing life the way we should. All these issues. But it was different. And so I have a real, even greater sense of respect to our law enforcement officers who are out there every day, putting their lives on the line for us.
So let me ask you a question, because one of your opponents, again, leveled an attack on you over police officers. And, you know, Josh said that you voted to get rid of 22 police officers.
Well, I threatened. He said I threatened, yeah. Too. And the issue is that this was, you know, Mary Verner was mayor at the time. I believe it was 2009. We'd had that huge downturn in the economy. Our revenues had just plummeted, and people were hurting, not just government. I mean, the people were hurting, and that's the way it usually goes, is how your people are doing financially and how they're prospering is dependent upon a direct nexus to your government, how we're doing. And nobody was doing well, and we had to go to all of the unions, and especially those that had COLAs or raises embedded, you know, in their contracts. And we had to, you know, basically beg and say, please, you know, we need you to give a little, because the people you're serving are hurting. And we all have to take a little bit of hurt on this. And if not, the fiscal reality was, if not, we were looking at having to cut 22 officers. And we were saying, we don't want to, but this is the fiscal reality. So it was a fiscal reality. It had nothing to do with that. I was threatening because I don't like our police force. Are you kidding me? After what I lived through in my neighborhood, I want my police officers around.
And you know, I when I look at campaign tactics like this, I go, well, what would you have done, Josh?
Yeah.
Because we faced that same thing at the county. We weren't quite as lucky as the city in that respect, because I did lose 34 deputies during that time. That was an economic reality. It's been an economic reality ever since, because 2008, 2 years, we're at 2018. It's a decade, and I'm still below what I was in 2006. And between 2006 and 2015, it's projected I should have hired 75. So you tell me, wow, just how far down I am when you take 75 plus 34, because that's that is where we should be right now, and we're not. We're nowhere near it. We're still down 34 from 2008. So the economic realities, as you speak, it's very hard to make those decisions. It's gut-wrenching to make those decisions. And just to flip that out there in a little political attack, is fairly disingenuous, because I look forward to having Josh on the radio, because I want to hear what would you have done.
Yeah, and you know, I think we are trying to do, not only do we need to look about how to get in the pipeline the ones that are paid for right now, these 12 office, deputy positions that you have there. I'm like, you know, what can we do processing-wise? I'd like to dig into that a little bit more. But the flip side through this whole, my last couple of years on the city council, I chaired the public safety committee, which, of course, I got to serve with you, which is a whole other topic, because you and I were on the same mm-hmm. committee when we were hiring a new police chief. Do you
yes,
remember that?
And we
were the only committee that really wanted to toss out all three of our finalists
and start over.
But all the other committees had a different thought. All the other interview committees. So that just came out of nowhere in my brain. But mm-hmm. I remember serving and saying none of us were very comfortable on that. But at the time, we were getting into this whole looking at the need of a new jail or some sort of corrections facility. What would that look like? And I know now we're working through the whole Spokane Regional Law and Justice Council issue. And I do think that we do need to look at who we are keeping in jail and who we're not, because to have people sitting in jail just because they can't pay a $100 bond and it's costing us $138 a day, and they're sitting there waiting, and they're we can prove that they're very low risk to offend, they made a stupid mistake, and then you have the person that bonds out and they've got 39 property crimes violations on them. I mean, I think that we're going into the right direction of trying to figure out, you know, how not only can we lower our costs through making sure that we've got the right people in jail, but I'm hoping, what do you say? I mean, I have a question for you on this. Is there some savings to be had in looking through this and figuring out who needs to actually stay in jail, who can do different things through pretrial services, that we could actually adjust some of those dollars? What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are that we already worked through all that.
Really?
Yes. This is dangerous territory that we're diving into
okay.
right now, because I have definite problems with what's going on right now.
Okay.
Because we did this. Nancy, this is my second decade on this issue. Second decade. This issue has been around since 1995. That means we're starting our third decade on this issue with no leadership in this community to end this problem. We hired an individual by the name of David Bennett back in 2007. David Bennett did all these studies that we're currently doing. And I'll tell you very bluntly, this was a stall tactic done by Mayor David Condon to prevent any motion forward on this issue. He got the blueprint for reform done, correct?
Right.
The blueprint for reform basically took David Bennett's work and encapsulated it into a report. Okay?
Okay.
There's a section in it on law enforcement. That section was written by me. It was given to Jim and his committee. All those things were done. And if you really take a very close look at the Bennett studies, the Bennett study showed that we only incarcerate the worst of the worst. They're high risk. At the time, out of roughly, I believe it was 950 inmates, there were only 130 misdemeanors.
Okay.
Okay, that means the rest are what? Felonies.
Yep, and they're not getting out anyways.
And those misdemeanors, roughly 55% of those were domestic violence misdemeanors.
Right, and they should be kept in.
Okay. And then you had a mixture of DUI, which is another serious offense, mm-hmm. and then you have some holds and some warrants and things like that. So all these studies showed that the Spokane County Sheriff's Correction System was incarcerating the worst of the worst. And we're now at the point that we can't even incarcerate the worst of the worst, because some of those $100 bonds you're talking about are people with 9 felonies.
Oh, yeah. Well, we should not. Look,
ORing them, releasing them on their own recognizance.
Yeah, no, we should not be doing
so
that.
So our system is flat broke. I just sat down with the U.S. attorney here locally, and the U.S. Marshals need 150 bed spaces. We only can provide them 30 to 40.
Correct.
That is a public safety emergency, because those aren't just federal inmates from Georgia or anywhere else. Those inmates are from Spokane County, and they are our worst of our worst felons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we want to take them federally to get them out of our community. We can't even comply or help our partners in that arena because we can't provide the jail spaces. So it's time for leadership.
Yeah,
it really
well,
is.
I do know that we need to make some tough decisions in the next very short period of time. And I'm new again, come in after over 2 years of being gone. So it's going to be an interesting walk. I do know this. I'm totally on board with our prosecutor, Larry Haskell, where he says we have to be careful that we do not take the pee out of prosecution.
That's right.
And that we do not allow Spokane to be used as a petri dish for unproven projects. So I'm very tentatively looking at the things that we're walking through and doing. So it's going to be fun.
You've got a minute and 45. Well, minute and 30.
Okay.
Closer up.
Well, I just want to say thank you, Ozzie, for this time. I know that we have issues and still struggles within our community, but I think we've got good people who want to do the right things. We want to look at these issues. We want to. A lot of it is getting back the priorities of government, which to me, the priorities of government should be our roads and infrastructure so we can provide good economic development that helps create the jobs that we need to grow the tax base, and public safety. People are not going to come to the area if they feel like you're lived in a crime-ridden area and that when they call, they can't get a sheriff's deputy or a Spokane police officer coming to the door. I struggle with those at the state level and above who do not understand that that's the struggle that we have when they're flitting our dollars away to a zillion different other programs, and we need to struggle and work with them as a team to try to get more of our dollars back into our local community. And I'd love to be able to continue to work with that.
You know, Nancy, you do a great job. From what I've seen over the last several years when you're on council, I respected your work there. I respect your work here. And folks, ballots are due next Tuesday. I hope you'll turn them in, because I read in the paper only 10% of you have turned your ballots in.
Yeah.
This is where democracy breaks down, folks. If you're not even willing to, I mean, it's easy now, we send it to you. If you're not willing to vote, then you will lose your democracy. This is Sheriff Ozzie Knezovich here on the Sheriff's Report, the fabulous 6:30. Have a great day.